Wild Talk Radio Network.
Theme song!
This is the Firefly Funhouse! And I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I've met along the way.
Hey, this is Adam Copeland, a.k.a. the Rated R Superstar.
Hey guys, this is Renee Paquette.
This is Kane from WWE.
This is WWE Superstar Drew McIntyre.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Hi, this is Bree. And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
This is Christopher Daniels, and what I like to do on my off days is listen to the rap, and now you are...
And it is awesome!
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Goodness gracious, great balls of fire!
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
You can look, but you can't touch.
Ruthless aggression.
With your host...
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker. Taker, Taker, Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers!
And her producer, Sir Rockin.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
If you smell...
Ow!
What the game is playing!
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
Welcome to The Rack right here on WildTalkRadio.com, brought to you by our friends over at MBG Films, YouTube.com/MBG1211. And if you're listening to us over on RackRadioShow.com, WildTalkRadio.com, or directly on Twitch, thank you so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. If you're on Twitch and you happen to have a Prime Gaming sub available, well, you can use it here for free for 30 days. All you have to do is hit the little purple button down at the bottom of the screen and hit the checkbox in there because they hit it. It's not as simple as it used to be, but it's still pretty dang simple to subscribe for free. You can also subscribe the regular way, or follow the channel, or hang out and chat, or listen to the archive. We're happy to have you any way we can get you. I'm your host, Lindsay Ward. Joining me, as always, is the ever faithful producer, slash co-host, slash handyman, Sir Rockin.
I do hand motions when you say certain things. Like, for when you click the purple rectangular button below the screen, I do a hand motion that points down. Weird.
You're just conducting, that's all.
I know. Anyway.
You're producing. You're actually doing your job. I'm so proud.
Exactly. Anyway, tweet us at Wild Talk Radio, at Radio Show, at Lynn's Work. Come to wildtalkradio.com, rackradioshow.com, right here at twitch.tv/WTRLive.
And we have a stacked show tonight. We're not doing news, notes, NXT, all your favorites. No, no, no. We don't have time for that, y'all, because we have a WrestleMania-level show to talk about tonight. We are going to review Crown Jewel, which aired today, this morning, actually. Depending on where you live, actually, it was morning for everybody. On the Peacocks or on the WWE Networks, depending on where you live. And yeah, there's a ton of stuff coming out of this match, or out of this show.
There's a ton of the stuff coming out of the show, but where we get started is where they got started on the kickoff with breaking news, and we just so happen to have the audio for you.
the most dominant Universal Champion of all time, Roman Reigns, will go head-to-head with the Beast Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship. Oh, and hold on, we have breaking news here. This match is now a no-disqualification match.
20 minutes later.
However, we do have some more news to present to you. Earlier, we did make an announcement that Universal Championship match was going to be a no-disqualification match. However, we have been told that Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns have no interest in that being the case. So
interesting.
We are taking that stipulation back off of the tape.
I can't tell if this was, like, a fuck-up or not. This is not on Caleb Braxton, by the way, or anybody on that panel.
I don't understand. They had a graphic that said no DQ. So either A, it was a old graphic that they made earlier in the week that they thought they were going to do a DQ match. Because she seemed cut off by it. Because I don't think it was in her notes, but she was looking at the screen. And it said no DQ. They tweeted about it, so I don't... They also tweeted breaking news, so maybe it was in the script. I don't know. But
I think it was in the script. And then I don't know if they, like, intentionally in the script took it back. I don't know if, like, somebody, it was in the script and it got left in the script and then somebody went, oh shit, because they had it all prepared. So, like, but you, like you said, she was even like, wait a minute.
The way she talked about it, it seemed like, wait, we have breaking, and then they tweeted, we have breaking news. So the people who are doing social are either not aware and just following along with what Kayla was saying, or this was a plan that, and it was legit 20 minutes later. Like, I know that I did the meme with it, but it was like legit 20 minutes later into the show, right before they started to preview the match. They go like, yeah, it's not in the show.
I feel like what happened was that based on how the match ended, which we're not going to talk about it just yet, but based on how the match ended, at one point it might have been in the script that it was supposed to be no DQ, and then they figured it out or they practiced it and they looked at it and they're like, well, realistically, based on everything that happened in that match, they don't really need the stipulation. It's kind of an extra at this point that they're not going to use except for one part, and they can get away with it in a standard match. So they possibly just took it off, especially since Bobby and Goldberg was the contract, false count anywhere.
Yeah, they added that to the contractual obligations that it would be no holds barred false count anywhere in the breaking news as well.
Which it was already a no disqualification, so maybe somebody messed up at corporate in the graphic design department and made them wrong match, no DQ, and that's the graphic that they had.
No, because it was worded two different ways. One was no holds barred.
But when they were playing the promo packages, you had Goldberg cutting a promo, I think, from either this past week or a couple weeks ago, where the match was always no DQ.
Well, it was always no DQ, but they called it no holds barred. That's...
Yeah.
It's
the same fucking thing.
It is the same thing, but wording is different, and I don't know how you can write the... I don't know. It's weird. That was like a... Botchamania moment that was unintentional botchamania because, like, they said something and then they changed it, and my brain goes, okay, so... I think they picked up it on the pre-show. Paul Heyman may have... The way they can excuse is Paul Heyman came up with the idea for no DQ, and then the word got back to Brock and Roman. Which, okay, which is weird, one in the fact that they signed a contract, so they... I don't know how you change the stipulations after you sign the contract, so maybe...
The only way that I feel like you could get away with that is if somehow it was in the contract and neither one of them saw it, which completely blows apart what happened on Friday, because both of them are like, I went over it with Paul.
So we didn't get to talk about it on Thursday because it happened on Friday, but Brock Lesnar basically going, yeah, Roman's like, you're a dumbass. Why didn't you read the contract? I did this morning with my advocate, Paul Heyman.
And Paul's face is just pain. It's just like the malicious compliance of Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman leading into this match was just beautiful. I loved everything about it. I hate that they made me love Brock Lesnar. That's so fucking rude.
And there was also an interview on the pre-show where the new guy, Kevin... I forget his last name, but I remember Kevin because of something later, is interviewing Paul, and Paul's like, Kayla put you up to this. And Paul Heyman's response was, yeah, I'm going to walk out with the Universal Champion Roman Reigns, and I'm going to walk out with the undisputed reigning, defending, undisputed Universal Champion, and walks away.
No name.
No name. That was fantastic storytelling.
It was also interesting in the pre-show the way that they kind of told some of the stories. Like, they did a really good job with the Woods match and making you doubt for a second that they weren't actually going to do the thing with Woods.
Oh, God. They were so heavy on praising Woods. It's like they're putting the doubt in your mind, because once somebody goes full on behind something in a pre-show.
Yeah, it's like that's the kiss of death.
Like, usually they try to get, because when they usually have the bigger panels, they usually get one person to disagree, but it's like, in this one, you had Matt Camp and Peter Rosenberg, so it's like, you weren't really going to get any much disagreement.
Mm-mm. No, they were very safe on the pre-show panel, I think, for all the obvious reasons. They didn't have a lot of, like, debates or discussions where there was dissension in the mix. They just...
No, and you put in the two guys who would not show you any, you know... sort of high-end debate. They're both very analytical and talked about all the matches in detail and everything. Matt Camp is really good. You ever watch him on the bumper and stuff, he really knows his product, so that's good.
Well, yeah, I think because they're doing their best not to give anything away on this show, especially on the pre-show, because sometimes that does happen where they'll give away the matches on the pre-shows accidentally, where it's just like, oh, oops, we went a little too heavy, or we said a little bit too much, or we had a bit little bit too lively of a debate. And so you kind of see where they're going in the script. This was very much very calm, very just, like you said, analytical, not a lot of debate. And I kind of wonder if it was pre-taped. Was it pre-taped or was it live?
I would assume it was. I mean,
because it was from the studios, in Riyadh.
It was 100% live, based on the, like, if it was taped, there would have been none of that breaking news stuff.
Unless they worked it in, I don't know.
I believe it was live from the studios.
I have no idea. I don't know, but yeah, the pre-show was actually really interesting. We also had on the pre-show, the Usos taking on Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander in a non-title match. This was really good, as you would expect it to be.
It was very basic. It was fun. But again, you didn't have to do much for the Usos in Saudi Arabia, because they were over.
Oh, yeah. 1,000%.
From the jump, they were over. This crowd, let's just talk about this crowd overall, was loud for majority of the night.
They were excited to be there. They were happy to be there. They were into most of the show, like you said. They let you know who they liked and who they didn't like. You sit there and some people are like, well, I don't understand why they're taking this person to Saudi Arabia. And then you hear the crowd reactions and you're like, that's why.
Oh, humble. Watching football as well.
There's also football.
There's football. If the Broncos lose this game, they should just pack it in for the season, by the way. Because Baker's not playing and the running back's not playing.
Oh my God, what? What?
What?
What? Is that a thing?
What?
If the ball gets fumbled in the end zone and the team recovers it, that's a touchdown?
Yeah.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
What would you call the result of play if it wasn't? However, it's not a touchdown, he was down by contact.
Okay. Well, no, I just, because the player has to, they're so weird about touchdowns sometimes.
But because it was a fumble and the ball trickles in, whoever, it's either a touchback or a touchdown. That would be the only two calls.
Football's weird. Also, he's down by contact. My favorite call, down by contact.
Down by contact. But anyway, back to the crowd. Yeah, you knew who they liked, who they didn't like, and it was very evident in this whole one. Browns just scored. But Shelton Benjamin, I thought, was really good in this match. He worked really hard. Yeah, overall this was fun. Like I said, fun match. Usos picked up the win, but they should have won. They made sure to call them the Hurt Business, so that's a thing, and talk more about that later. They were kind of saying, like, Lashley wasn't in the Hurt Business, it was just Benjamin and Alexander were now the Hurt Business, but...
He's kind of like Hurt Business adjacent. They're business partners, but they're not like all together.
Yeah.
But the one thing that you could tell about the show on both sides was that WWE was very excited to be there in front of that crowd, and they put everything they had into the show, and then the crowd gave it back tenfold because they were super excited that they were there, because this is the first time in 2 years that they've been over.
Yeah, the last big show they did, wasn't it? Was it Chamber? It might have been Chamber. But but it was like one of the last shows they did was in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it was like the last, it was like Rumble, and then they did Chamber, and there, because remember, there were doubts if they were going to be able to go over for Chamber because of COVID, because it was spreading, and they had to get, I think, special permission, due to political reasons.
No, they went over fine, because it happened, and then everything broke out 3 weeks later.
Yeah, so, but that was the last time they were there, so almost 2 years ago was the last time. So yeah, everybody was very excited to be there. You could feel the energy, and it was really good, positive energy.
22,000 people in attendance tonight.
That was pretty bitchin'. Although I will say it was really weird to be sitting at my desk drinking my morning coffee, because I still had some, and watching wrestling. That was just a little strange. I'm not opposed to it. It was just very strange.
So I like the building setup because the acoustics of the building kept the sound in. Like a lot of the shows they've done in Crown Jewel, they've been open air stadiums, so everything just sort of traveled outward. But in this building, you heard like the sound, like all the music. You heard it in the building. You heard it. It was loud, and you heard the crowd was loud. It kept the noise in, it's cool looking for like the big stadium shows, but when you have like the noise like trickling down into the building,
when it's contained, it's better because all the sound just goes up and out of the open air stadiums, which is why you have to have the absolutely massive crowds at those stadiums to make the noise impactful. And if you work a smaller building with a roof, it's a lot better because it just contains it and it reverberates, and the cameras and the mics and everything just pick it up so much better, and it's just absolutely, in certain instances, thunderous.
What I also thought was important from the crowd was, compared to previous crowds, this felt like a younger crowd.
Yes, at least, I would agree with that.
At least visually. Early on, they were sitting at tables in the shows. They were in actual seats in the building, and they, at least in the front rows, it was a younger audience, and they were loud, they were into everything, they were cheering, they were doing all your normal WWE chants, this is awesome, they were booing, they were cheering, they were doing everything.
It was great.
It was really, really good. Overall production of the show was
wonderful.
Let's get into some, go ahead.
One last final thought, just overall on the show, I have nothing but positive things and positive impressions about the show. Like, this to me was a very, very good show. It was very well put on, very well produced, very well executed. Like, everything about this was really well done. And it was such a relief and so nice to see, because it's like, oh yeah, this is it. This is what it should feel like. Because sometimes it's like Crown Jewel, at least the last one that I can remember, it's like there isn't as much excitement about it. This one had a really good energy going into it. And so because of that, that just carried through the whole night.
Some of the big excitements in previous Crown Jewels were Undertaker moments where they were either really good or really awful.
Well, I mean, he was there. He just wasn't there. He just wasn't present. But
can we talk about that?
Taker was there. He came over. He introduced Pitbull because the Prince really loves Taker. So, you know what? For his money, he gets the Undertaker, even if he didn't perform. Like, I'm surprised they just didn't have him come out and wave and
I mean, maybe he wasn't with the crew. I don't know.
It's very coincidental if he wasn't. Like, I feel like they brought him over because he is under contract to them. So technically for Taker to come, they would have to like go through WWE to get him. But he got that payday, man. Good on you, Mark.
Yeah, he did. It was so weird. You see the videos, there's this whole big long Mr. 305. Mr. Worldwide.
It's so... And I feel bad for him because it's a meme now of him and the guy liner and the leather top with the mic. It's a meme.
He hasn't put on guy liner in forever. By the way, I think that's where Mustafa got his from.
I was going to ask if he was wearing guy liner.
Yeah, he was.
Because it looked like he was.
Oh, he was 100%. He was 100%.
I was sitting there and I'm like, is he wearing eye makeup? Like, not opposed to it. He looked good in it. But like, is he... It's just like, is that what I think that is?
That is exactly what you think it is.
No offense to Mark, by the way, but you can tell that, like, he has not put on the eyeliner and he does it himself because he does it so fucking thick around his eyes. Like, dude, you do not need that much eyeliner, okay? Like, you just don't. Like, put it on really subtly, like, in around your lash line. There's gestures going on. Like, you just line literally your lash line, and then you take a brush and you blend it into your lash line, and then you have, like, eyeliner. Or you can do, like, the liquid cat eye thing going on, but he doesn't have to do the cat eye because that would just be weird. But, like, he could do that too. Like, this was, like, I want to say it was, like, a quarter of an inch thick. Like, it's some eyeliner, man. You see it. And I don't know if it was... he was covering stuff up. I don't know if it's just that's how he does it, because he hasn't done it that thick in years.
No.
I think what happens, especially at the tail end of his career, is the makeup ladies got a hold of him and they stopped him from making eyeliner mistakes. They didn't get to him here because I don't think they were there.
They were not with him. No, this was, he's on his own. Like, you see him, there was clips when he was doing his last big run in WWE where he would do it on his own because he was working house shows, so he was on his own doing it. Here, he was on his own again because Michelle was doing her own hairstyles back home in the States.
It was a thing. Anyway, moving on.
Can we talk about weirdness?
Let's talk about weirdness.
All right, the show starts, big entrance, Seth Rollins and Edge, they get their whole big entrances, right?
Edge
was over. Right? We had camels. We had effing camels.
I'm not sure why they were there, but they were lovely decorations. Like, of all the random things you could have at Saudi, camels. And it's totally appropriate, but at a Saudi show, you have live camels right by the stage where they're doing explosions.
The fact that they didn't go crazy was amazing.
I mean, they were the chillest damn camels I think I've ever seen. Not that I think they're very, like, aggressive, but the closest I've ever been to a camel is at the zoo, so I don't really know, but like, these were just very calm and chill, and they were standing there hanging out with their handlers, and they're like, yeah, I'm cool, I'm here. I think they were actually there for Riddle.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, but they were just chilling. They were just straight chilling. It was like, okay, all right.
Something of note, they announced that this was the 50th Hell in a Cell match in WWE history.
That's excessive. And most of them were done by The Undertaker or Triple H, so, you know.
Early on, yeah. At later stages, everyone's got an turn at the Cell, because we've had...
Because of the pay-per-view, yeah.
This was the fifth Cell match this year? Because there was one on SmackDown, two on the pay-per-view, right? There were two on the pay-per-view, I think.
There's one or two. I think there was only the one on the pay-per-view, because the other one got canceled, or something.
And then there was one more on Raw. So there
Brent!
Were... He's in class. He won't help us.
Damn it.
I'm looking it up myself. I have to do my own research because someone's too busy being educating. And
you know, this is why we have an intern.
Yeah, there was two. It was Lashley and Drew and Bianca. Like we talked about, Lashley, Drew, and Bianca and Bailey.
Well, I couldn't remember. It's like I thought it happened, but it's like I couldn't remember.
Yeah, they put Bianca and Bailey in when it wasn't going to be, because they moved the Roman match, Roman and Ray to SmackDown, and then Woods and Lashley went in one. So this was the fifth Hell in a Cell this year. So, like, they were averaging three or four a year for a while now. So, yeah. But this was how Hell in a Cell should be, just based on the feud. You build to a Hell in a Cell, and you get violence, you get extremeness, you get personal inside a Hell in a Cell. One big thing, a couple big things we noticed. One, they figured out how to film the red Hell in a Cell by seemingly putting a camera inside the cell. Not just the guys roaming, there was a hard camera. Either was very zoomed in past the cell wall, or was actually in the cell, and was on an angle-ish, kind of. It was shaking a little bit, but then it was on an angle. But you could see the majority of the cell. Lindsay talked about how it was, the green sort of doled out the redness, too.
Yeah, because you have the complementary colors. I'm going to do color theory for a second, sorry. Because you have the complementary of the red and the green of the Crown Jewel logo behind it, because they had the video screens there, helped to kind of cancel the red of the cell a little bit. So it wasn't as invasive as it normally is when you just have a crowd backdrop, because it's a really bright, hot red, and you kind of have that more, like, cooler-ish. Well, it's not a cool green, it's kind of like a hot green, but like it helps to cancel, and that was good too. But yeah, they definitely had something in the cell, or they had something zoomed inside the cell, so when they did the wide shot, the cell was not distracting. It was, you could actually see the match, because normally when they shoot the red cell, it's in the way and you can't see anything because all you literally see is red. So it's like somebody looked at that and finally went, hey, why don't we like do this and it will be better. So I don't know who that person is, but they deserve a raise, unless it's Kevin Dunn, and then he doesn't need any more raises, he has enough money. But if it's somebody under Kevin Dunn, please give them a raise, because thank you, y'all finally figured out how to shoot that damn thing.
And somebody they didn't make a big deal out of on the show, but it was a major deal. Who was the referee, Lindsay, in this match?
Jessica Carr.
Yeah, the lady ref, Jessica Carr. She was the referee in a couple matches on this show, but she got the honor of being the first female referee, I think, in Saudi Arabia.
She was either there... This is either the first time or I think she might have been there last time, too. I'd have to go back and look. But yeah, that was pretty cool because I was sitting there and I was kind of wondering if they had brought her over in terms of their complement of referees. Because they could easily pull people from NXT and have them there and have an all-male staff. But it was really neat to see that she got to come over and she got to do the show.
She mentioned something on Twitter where she's going to comment more about it, how awesome it was. Go ahead.
But it just kind of shows, like, and we'll talk about this when we get to the women's matches, but, like, this show compared to the other ones that they've done, you can see the progression in them working with the government and what the government is willing to allow them to do. Because before, at the very first show, they were not allowed to bring any of the women. They could not have them there. And so it was an all-male show. And then the next go-round, they let them have some of the women there. And I think it was they got to do an exhibition match. And then this time we actually had full matches. Like Renee was there and she got to commentate one of the last times and that kind of thing. So like there is a natural progression where they're allowing more and more and more with WWE and giving them that kind of that leeway that they need to be able to do a show, because that was the one thing that sucked was that when they would go over, they couldn't have the women there, or the women couldn't do what they're fully capable of, and so it wasn't as good as you would want it to be, and it didn't help the show any. Being able to have the women there and let them work helped the show a lot. But let's get back to this match. Because this was everything you could ever want in a Hell in a Cell without blood. This was really, really good. This was really, really physical. Like, Edge could have phoned this the fuck in and not done a thing. Oh no. No, no. That's not what happened.
No, this was really, really good. Couple things of note. One, Seth Rollins pulled out Christian's Unprettier.
Yeah, there were lots of Christian references. It was interesting.
Christian and old Edge moves as well. But Seth freaking Rollins. This man... It's on the top rope. This is the first time we ever seen this bump, so props to him for taking it. So he's on the top rope. Edge gets up, shoves him off the top rope into the cell, and this man bounces off the cell wall through a goddamn table.
Like you do.
Like that, if he was off by an inch, either way, could have been disaster.
But it wasn't, and he nailed it, and we're all, like, really excited for it, because it was. It was absolutely... That was a great bump we had.
So, the Edge-O-Matic on the steps, right? They may mention how Edge may have taken some of the brunt of the bump, and then when you look at the replay, it looked like the corner of the steps went, you know, between the cheeks.
Which couldn't have felt good.
No. They may have mentioned... of Edge doing the flying chair spot, shades of the Taker Cell match he had many moons ago.
Many, many, many moons ago.
It was many, many moons ago. Edge pulling out Seth Rollins' buckle bomb, which was great. And then we just started pulling out all the tricks. Tables, ladders, in the cell with camels. Oh my, you just had to get everything in this one.
They, like I said, they went for it. They really went for it, which you would expect them to. Like, they understood the assignment and they executed this properly, because this was a highly personal feud that has been built and built and built over months. And this is one of those stories that the natural conclusion is that it should end up in Hell in a Cell, because it's just gotten to that point where nothing else will work. Nothing else will do. They just have to be locked in a cell to kill each other for 20 minutes, and then whoever's left standing is the one left standing. It doesn't really matter who wins. It's just somebody has to win. But yeah, this was...
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, let's talk about the sunset bomb.
Yeah, that's weird. Okay, so that's where I was getting to. So... They didn't make a big deal about this, but this was a big deal. So Seth Rollins does the sunset flip off the top rope, off the ladder through the table, right? This is a big deal because it was, what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whenever it was, when Seth Rollins blew out his knee, where he did this spot, sans ladder, to Kane overseas, where he did the sunset flip into the powerbomb, but that's where he blew out his knee. So them going back to that spot in this match is like, okay, you can tell he's... I know he's been healthy for years now, but it's like a repetition thing. It's like, should we be doing that spot just because of what happened before? But it was a nice little add to the match. Then so after that spot, Rollins is like, Edge is dead. He's dead. So what does Seth Rollins do? He grabs a chain. He's looking underneath the ring for anything he can find, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gets a toolbox, and it had a chain in it. So he wraps his boot in the goddamn chain.
Shades of Kyle O'Reilly.
Shades of Kyle O'Reilly, yeah. And he was trying to end Edge, was unsuccessful at doing so. We saw the Glasgow grin with a wrench.
Okay, so we need to talk about this, because basically Edge puts Seth in the crossbar. He has the chain. He's holding onto the chain that's around Seth's leg. And then he's got a wrench that he's got between Seth's teeth, and he's pulling on it. And it just looked absolutely brutal.
Yeah, dude.
Right, but... Sorry, go ahead.
I said, yeah, dude.
And, like, you know, you would think that would be it, right? Like, that's a perfect conclusion. Edge taps Seth out in the most extreme way that he can. But, oh, no, Edge was not done. That was not good enough for Mr. Copeland. Oh, no, no, no. He had to take this to the next level. So what does he do? He goes. He gets himself the chair. He puts it under Seth's head. And then he goes for the stomp on the chair, which is the punctuation to end this match.
To end the feud. Like, to end the feud.
To end everything. It is the exclamation point on this. And it was the perfect way to button this whole thing up. And Edge stands victorious in Saudi Arabia in Hell in a Cell. I could not have asked for a better match. Like, I just, especially as the opener, like, that this was the opener. This set the tone for the fucking show. This was so good.
Yeah, that's the best place to do that on the show, by the way, because it's like, if you did it anywhere else, you would have ruined the rest of the show. At least here, doing it, it was the longest match on the show. It was about 28 minutes, bell to bell. But yeah, this was the best spot to do it, because anything else would have had to say, now you gotta, before, like, all right, everyone's waiting for the Cell, and then afterwards, like, everything has to compete with the Cell. At least here, all right, you got it out of the way, did all the hardcore-ness that you can do, the craziness, whatever, and you gave the rest of the show a chance to recover and build up to the bigger matches at the end. So it was a nice placement. They say you'd rather be on first. If you're not on last, you'd rather be first.
Yeah, and this was absolutely perfect. And then we went into a nice just sort of like breather match, and I don't want to call this that, but this was just after Hell in a Cell. The crowd just kind of needed a minute because they were super into the Hell in a Cell. And we had Mustafa Ali taking on Mansoor in a good match. Like, this was actually pretty entertaining. Ali was running his mouth
a lot. It was a nice cool down match, but it wasn't a cool down match because you had Mansoor, the hometown kid, in this
and
match.
They were very excited for him.
Oh, he was very over. He, like, his entrance he looked like a effing star in this one. But Mustafa trash talked the entire time, and they did a camel clutch, and then you were doing it in front of the camel, so it was weird.
Lots of camel references.
Yeah. So there was a point in this match. This match was pretty good, right? Very solid, mm-hmm. Very good match, right? Both men worked really hard. But the camera work, there was a two count, and it was like one, and they cut to a fan at the two count. It's like, wait. You missed the transition into the Koji clutch or whatever I think it was he did, but Mustafa did. But it's like you missed the one, the kick out, and two, the transition into the submission. It was weird. It was someone did the snap, calling for the next shot before the things happened. And there were a couple of times throughout the night you cut to different things randomly. But
that didn't take away from the match, no. Per se, but it was just awkward. Like, it was just really kind of weird. But, yeah, then for the ending, we, you know, of course, Mansoor does have to stand victorious. It is Saudi Arabia. I don't think anybody was terribly surprised, but we had the springboard neckbreaker for the win for Mansoor. But, you know, Mustafa Ali was not going to take that lying down, so he gets up and he starts beating up Mansoor and, you know, yelling at him and everything like that. And, well, Mansoor needed a little help. Just a little bit. Not a lot, just a little bit. So, you know, somebody was there to help him out. This mysterious masked man came out.
Okay.
And we're all sitting here like, who the hell is this?
Lindsay goes, who is... Because I heard that the person was going to be there on the show, so I was like, just wait for it. But good lord, could this dude have walked any slower to the ring? By God.
He He takered it, man. Like, he was taking his time. He was eating it up.
He ate up the ovation for the crowd. And the crowd was like, who? And then he unhooks the things around his face and just sort of, and the crowd then erupts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was like this moment, like, the crowd's going crazy, everybody's going crazy, and I'm like, who is this man? Like, who is it? And they're like, it's Olympic medalist, Tareg Hamedi. And I'm like, oh.
Olympic silver.
No, no disrespect. I did not watch the Olympics at all, so I have no idea who this guy is.
Okay. So he's an Olympic, he was a silver medalist in the most recent Olympics. Okay. He came in a ring after his long walk to the ring, crowd pops, so whatever the... Poor Mustafa just had to wait for him to get there, but it was fine. Mustafa took the kick right to the head. Boom. The fast kick, too. Quicker than anything he did coming to the ring. So it was like a cool local crowd moment. The home audience is like, oh, okay. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, when they're like, it's this person. He's an Olympic silver medalist from Riyadh. I'm like,
oh,
got it.
It makes all the sense in the world. Could they move them down to the ring a little faster? Yeah.
Well, I don't know because he had a band-aid over his eye, so I don't know if he had been in a fight and he gotten hurt. Like,
I don't know, but it was like the slow walking could have just sped him up a little bit. Just
he was eating it up. He was enjoying himself.
He was, and there was nothing wrong with it. It was a cool moment for that crowd. And again, these shows are built for those crowds, not for us, it's for them. And yeah.
It was a cool little moment for the local crowd and for people who know who he is. I'm sure it was a very cool moment. No offense to him, like I said, I did not watch the Olympics, so I have no idea who he is.
The one comment I need to make, Michael Cole, called him a karate player.
He tried. I just kind of sat here for a minute and I was like, what?
What the fuck is a karate player?
I'm like, okay. I'm pretty sure. Well, maybe he's not. Is it master? Is it a karate master? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm very poorly educated in that area. I never took martial arts. Maybe he's not.
So it's like a practitioner or something, but no one ever
maybe
calls
that's him. What he meant.
Maybe, or you know, you could reference he's a karate fighter. He's a mixed martial artist.
I don't think he is MMA.
But karate's mixed martial arts. It's
no, karate is karate, dude.
It's in there.
Like, mixed martial arts is, I think you do multiple things. Karate is like karate.
But still, you could have used a better term. Anyone remember karate fighters? They were awesome. Am I the only one? Okay, never mind.
I never played it, so I don't know.
No, they were like the Rock'em Sock'em robots.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I never played it. I never called them karate fighters. They were Rock'em Sock'em.
Well, they were like in...
And that's not really karate. That's like boxing.
No, WWE's one sponsor back in the Attitude Era was karate fighters. It was like a knockoff version of Rock'em Sock'em robots. They were actually karate fighters. They would do tournaments with the wrestlers for like the commercial spots where they were holding karate fighter tournaments.
I think I remember seeing one of those commercials.
Yeah, it was cool back in the day. Anyway, that's a tangent for another day. But call karate player? Okay. What was next?
So up next, we got the smoke in the form of Matt Riddle and Randy Orton, RK-Bro, taking on AJ Styles and Omos. And Matt, honey, you did not need to be that extra, but this bitch, I don't know how else to describe him, comes out to the ring.
No, hold on. You describe him as a bro. This bro.
I like bitch better. Anyway, this man
this bro.
Comes out to the ring riding one of the camels. And he's just full on stretched out on the camel, doing the Randy pose, eating it up. It's like, God.
Randy walked out first.
Why do you have to be this extra?
Randy walked out first and waiting for the entrance, and Riddle just slowly comes behind him on the camel. Oh, it was fantastic. It's like this dude out here just...
I kind of wonder if... Because there were two camels. So I kind of wonder if Randy was supposed to ride the other camel and he just didn't want to do it. Or it didn't work out or something like that. And so they had that, or they had two camels there just in case one, you know, like, didn't work. They had a backup camel. I'm not sure how that goes, but yeah, like Riddle just riding to the ring on a camel honestly made it.
It was awesome. We learned later the camel was named Scooter.
after his scooter.
After his scooter. Also, anyway, after, good, we'll do the afterwards now. Riddle also knew a guy who knows a guy, and Randy's like, you pretty much know a guy in every place we go.
Or a girl.
Or a girl, and then to celebrate, yeah, they won. Randy had a couple of the solo cups left, so they can get the smoke, get it?
Guys, that's not legal there.
Anyway, I loved Omos in this match. Him and Randy's interaction in the ring where Randy's hitting him and almost is like, is that all you got? Hit me harder. Hit me harder.
Again, daddy, again.
Oh my god, yes. But yeah, this match was fun.
I really like this pairing, like this grouping of people. It's going to get old after a while, but like it's really, really entertaining. And you can see that Omos has grown just leaps and bounds being with AJ. And AJ is just taking him in a completely different direction with Omos. And I love that. And then the same thing is true for Randy and Matt. Like, it's just, it's so good. This is such wonderful chemistry here.
So Omos came in as a big stoic dude, and as over time has grown as a performer and in the ring, you can tell he's learning and doing different things, but he's now letting his personality shine, and it's the cockiness there of he's a big dude who's like can do anything he wants in that ring. Yeah, they got they got something with Omos.
I'm digging Omos. I'm digging him a lot. But yeah, like my only complaint about this match, and I hate how they do this every single time when they're going to do the springboard off the ropes into the RKO, is the way that they set that up. Because in this one, you could see that Randy was waiting for AJ. And I hate it when they do that. It's such a nitpicky little thing and it has really no impact on the match. But I hate that when you see them very clearly waiting for the spot, but it was more of a camera angle because you could just tell by the way Randy was standing that he caught AJ. If they had used a different camera, I feel like it would have.
So what they need to do is they have to focus on AJ. They have to focus the entire time on AJ as he's standing for the springboard. So you have to have the camera focused right in on him and then do the quick cut to the RKO.
Yeah.
It was shot incorrectly because there's no other way to shoot it other than he has to wait for him because it's weird, but the camera work has to be focused on AJ's face as he's ready. Come on, get up, get up, get up, get up. You springboard and then you cut to it right away to it. You were too long on Randy. Even by like 2 seconds, it was 2 seconds too long of you're on Randy, you see what's coming. But the arcade, it's still a nice spot. And then the floating bro afterwards was...
Yeah, it was a really lovely little match. The crowd was into it. A lot of fun. And standing victorious is RK-Bro.
So there was a promo backstage with Becky, and she's talking to Kevin, right?
They go back. They go way back. Back to the old country.
They go back to the old country, and he asks her a question and brings up Sasha beating her on SmackDown. She's like, I'm aware, Kevin. It was such a little line, but like, it stuck to me. It's like, I'm aware, Kevin.
It's like you had to bring that up now. You just had to do that, didn't you?
We go back. I'm aware, Kevin. They're going to have more interactions now because she's on Raw and Kevin is the Raw guy. So that's...
I can't wait.
That should be fun. But what was next on the match? On the show?
Up next, it's your stopwatches. Get your stopwatches because it's the Queen's Crown Final.
Stopwatch Mania. Woo!
Here we go. Zelina Vega taking on Doudrop to crown the first ever Queen of the Ring. This was a good showing. It was a little awkward, just because I think there were some size differences there that made it a little bit awkward, and I don't think they got to work together a lot to kind of work out some of the kinks beforehand.
You could tell they haven't really worked together, that's one, but... And they're very limited in terms of mobility based on country restrictions to what they can do. But I thought both women put on a good showing. I thought Doudrop handled herself really well. I thought Zelina used her speed a lot to do some really good stuff to work around Doudrop and her size. They came up with some creative spots. The DDT was really good. They were able to pull it off. Doudrop used her power with the sidewalk slams and everything like that. I thought if they got more time, not for a match, But to work together to kind of work out some of the moves, they probably rehearsed it early in the morning, but work out some more stuff and get used to each other, how each other work, it would have been a better match. That said, they put on a show. Crowd was all right into it. The one thing limited was because of the circumstances was, like, a lot of Dewdrop's charm is her colorfulness as she, you know, when she comes to the ring and everything like that. So, but she was very monotone in this.
I don't think that necessarily carries, because, like, clearly later on you could customize your gear, so I don't know if it's something that, like, she brought stuff and it didn't work and so they got her something very basic, or, like, she just didn't get custom gear made, which is entirely okay, there's nothing wrong with that. But, like, I feel like her personality and her effervescence carried through.
In the match, yeah. I meant more the entrance. It was a very more... I was talking more of the entrance. It's more, it was more monotone than you're used to seeing with her, if that makes sense.
A little bit, but I mean, it wasn't too bad. I would say she was more, like, serious. She's more toned down than anything else. Like, I don't think it had anything to do with, like, what she was wearing. I think it's just she was taking it a little bit more seriously than what she normally does, because maybe this is a big deal, right?
Yeah. But the finish felt like it came out of nowhere, because it did, the code red.
And you're new. First.
Yeah.
Queen of the Ring.
It's Queen's Crown.
It's Queen of the Ring. It's the same thing. Zelina Vega. Girl, like, if she rolls up tomorrow on SmackDown wearing that dress that she had on Raw.
It'd be
she's on Raw.
Yeah, she's on Raw.
Well, she could still be on SmackDown because they're all flying back.
No, she cannot. Because the brand extension goes into effect tomorrow.
They can fudge it.
They're not.
It's fine.
She'll be
on. They can shut up. Stop arguing with me.
It's fun.
My point is that if she shows up with that dress and that crown again,
yeah.
Do it. That's how she needs to walk around. Is with that crown is just dressed to the nines like that. Because damn, she can pull that off.
So is Zelina Vega representing SmackDown in this? Just weirdness. Now she's on Raw, is your Queen's Crown winner. The first ever. They talk a lot about first evers, and a lot have been the horsewomen, and rightfully so. Selena Vega is your first Queen's Crown.
They see a lot in her. I think they obviously brought her back because they had intentions of doing things with her. And now it looks like they're starting to move her up a little bit. They're starting to put her into specific contention for, you know, a couple titles maybe. Or a title. Don't want to get ahead of myself, but they're starting to make her a contender in the women's division, which I say about damn time, because she is incredibly talented. She's very good at what she does, and they should utilize her more, you know?
Yeah. All right, what was next?
So, no, the dress was not dental floss.
It just showed off things very nicely.
Basically, it was like a sparkly body or a sparkly leotard. And then it has, like, fabric draped over one side. It's a very striking look on her. She wore it to the Latin music, I think was it Latin Billboard?
Maybe, I don't know.
She wore it to an award show, and she looks absolutely fire in it. Like, she looks so good. So, if she wants, and she wore it on Monday night. She walked out in it as Dewdrop was wrestling, so it was like, okay, alright, wasn't prepared for that, but okay, go off. So she wants to, like, carry those looks forward, do it. We're all here for it.
We are. Alright, next.
Up next, we have the almighty Bobby Lashley taking on contractual obligation in a no-holds-barred falls-count-anywhere match.
Okay.
This was better than I thought it was going to be.
This was better than SummerSlam. That's not saying much, because SummerSlam was bad. The awkwardness was early, where Lashley was trying to put Goldberg's leg in a chair. And it was awkward. He had some tissues trying to put it in there and then trying stomping. And the idea early on was to work the knee of Goldberg, because that was coming off of... SummerSlam, where he had to have surgery, and that's the main focal point of the attack, trying to take out the legs of Goldberg, which is fine. It worked. And Lashley's dominating, and they're putting over Lashley. And we're going to end it right here, right now. Lashley's going to spear him through the table. Does not, because Goldberg moves. Goldberg then hammers his own leg. Like, can I get some blood in my leg and get some blood flowing? Hits a spear. Actually hit a jackhammer. To the surprise of everyone watching, he actually hit it and held him up there for a moment. Impressive, because he couldn't get the Fiend up.
I mean, well, I think Bill actually showed up to work this time.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, he did show up to work, because you could tell the last two times he didn't show up to work, because the last two performances, he was wearing shorts.
Yeah, this time he actually came to play
He wore his MMA tights this time. So, he actually showed up. Because Saudi pays for Goldberg, doesn't pay for half-ass Goldberg.
Yeah. And I think based on the feedback of the last two times, especially when you drop Mark Calloway on his neck and goddamn near break it, that's gonna kind of result in maybe some consequences. And I think the fact that they had issues the last two times that they trotted him out over there, it's like, okay, dude, you need to, like, actually show up to play and work.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for some of his matches, he has not been given a lot of notice, so he doesn't stay in wrestling shape all the time. This one, I feel like he had a lot of notice on it, and so he's been able to get himself back into ring shape or a level of ring shape that he can work, which was nice. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate that.
So, can I talk about the biggest fight Goldberg has had in his career?
I mean, that's kind of a stretch, but okay. There was a lot of stretching going on in this show, especially for specific matches. They did it in the Roman match, too.
But Goldberg's toughest fight was removing his gloves.
Yeah, that was a struggle.
He hit the struggle bus trying to get his gloves off of his hands.
Yeah, he couldn't quite get them off, and he finally did.
It took
forever. He finally degloved.
He would then end up spearing Lashley through a barricade. Then the Hurt Business show up. Like, it was such an awkward... Oh, God, it was so awkward. So Lashley's was... Okay, so they tried a spot where Goldberg was trying to kill Lashley with the steps, but step on step. But Lashley moved, rolled out of the way, and he's walking up the ramp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Goldberg's slowly walking, like, 15 feet behind him. Slowly. And then Lashley finally gets to the top of the stage, and Goldberg's, like, a quarter of the way up. And then out came... The Hurt Business with kendo sticks. So they're like, they have their swords, they're ready to fight, and they come charging at Goldberg, and Goldberg destroys both of them really quick. Backdrop to Cedric, and I think he just took out Shelton with the stick. And then he beats on Lashley with the stick. Big finish. Spear off the stage or tables on or set up on the other side of the stage. This is why you made a false count anywhere, because that's where Goldberg mounted and got his win. I think contractual obligations for 2021 are finally finished.
Yay. I understand it. It's the natural conclusion to the match. The spot on the ramp was super, super freaking awkward. But, you know, they did the thing. They got through it. Bill showed up to work, which was appreciated. I didn't want him to win. I'm going to be completely honest. Like, I didn't want him to win. I felt like Bobby Lashley should have won. And then you could do a return if you really wanted to have Goldberg get the win. Because I feel like, here's my thing. Winning does nothing for Goldberg. I understand it's the dude defending his family. I respect that wholeheartedly. But it's, winning does nothing for Goldberg. And now Bobby Lashley's going to have to go back to Raw, and they're going to have to start, like, from scratch with him. And I feel like anytime anybody loses to Goldberg, especially in Saudi, it's like the kiss of death for them, you know?
Oh, yeah. Goldberg got a nice promo about family on .com, so if you haven't seen it, go check it out. Yeah, they're going to have to rebuild Lashley. That's sort of where we're at there.
And he's like, don't ever mess with my family. And it's like, okay. I mean, like I said, I understand the point. Bobby attacked his son. Bill should win from that standpoint because it's Bobby Lashley's the bad guy and he should get his comeuppance. But I think in this instance, Bobby just should have won because it does more for Bobby. especially with all the work that you've done for him, he should absolutely, you know, just win, because we all love Bobby Lashley. But wasn't the case, and that's okay. That's fine.
Before we get to the next match, this is The Rack live right here on Wild Talk Wrestling Network, presented by MBG Films, youtube.com/MBG1211. By the way, did you know you can use creator code ROCKSOCK or Lindsay M. Ward in the Fortnite item shop? Because we are hashtag Epic Partners.
Ew! All right. So here was really one of the moments of the night for everybody. You have your King of the Ring finals, Xavier Woods versus Finn Balor. And I'm going to say it, Xavier coming out, he was a little off. Like, he just didn't seem like himself. And he explained it in an interview afterwards.
We're going to play it after.
Yeah, he explains it in the interview afterwards why he was off. But yeah, you could tell that he was definitely a little off. This was really good. This was very hard hitting, forearms, chops.
Oh god, they just that exchange where they just started hitting each other back and forth was,
they went for it. It was like, because it's like, here's the thing. You had Finn, and they told the perfect story with this, because it's Finn, right? And Finn's just there to win the thing. He doesn't really care what it is at this point. It's just, I'm here to win. That's all I'm here to do. Woods, they kind of told the story, and I wish they'd had more time to tell the story, that he's wanted this since he was a kid. He became a wrestler to win King of the Ring. This is his end goal. People show up to win titles. Woods came to win King of the Ring. So this literally means everything to him. Everything.
It does mean everything to him. So what was cool in this match? So if you're a follower of Up, Down, Down and the Battle of the Brand series, which hasn't been on for a month now, so I don't know what's up with it. But when they watch matches, so one of the moves in WWE SmackDown vs. Raw 2006 is a sneaky pin. And Woods worked it into this match. I was like, I see you. I see what you did there, sir.
It's not Xavier without a reference.
I see what you did. It's great. But this was your straightforward Finn Balor match. Finn did his traditional moveset, the sling blade, the missile drop kick, or the shotgun drop kick, whatever you want to call it. And they missed the coup de grace. Woods would miss an elbow at one point, but then he was able to finally hit a gut buster. I think it was a gut buster, that's what they called it. And then hit his flying elbow for the win. Lindsay, for the win.
I was so happy. And everybody else was too, that they went for it. Like, everybody just exploded. Twitter exploded. They have reactions from Kofi. He put out a video of him watching Woods win, and he's so ecstatic and happy for his friend. And yeah, this was, you were kind of doubting it. We talked about it earlier with the pre-show of how heavy they were going for Woods. And it was like, oh God, are they not going to do it? Because they could go with Finn, and Finn would be perfectly acceptable. There is nothing wrong with Finn. But you really do have the moment with Xavier to do something really cool and have it mean so much to everybody. And there's been this massive groundswell, and there's been this push online, and there's been all these people who have been, you know, putting out their hashtag King Woods, you know, let's do the thing, let's go do it. And so the fact that they actually went for it and they actually did it and they put the King of the Ring on him is so wonderful. Because you know how much it means to him. And that's not to say that it doesn't mean anything to Finn, but you know how much it means to Xavier.
He got into wrestling to do this. Everyone does different things, and we'll talk about it. He'll let him talk about it in a second. But he's in it for this. This just shows show you how awesome the moment was. The phrase, he did it, was trending.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but the aftermath. The aftermath. Talk about it.
So Woods, victorious. Climbs his throne, or climbs the dais. He takes his crown. He crowns himself with the cape and the crown, the King of the Ring. He's declared the winner. And as he's celebrating, he looks at the cameraman and he goes, "You're my cameraman. You stay on me. You stay focused on me. You have to listen to me now. I'm the king."
Because they cut away to a crowd shot, and he's like, "No, stay on me. This is my camera now."
This is like, own it. Own it, Woods. Own it. And he was, man. He was just absolutely living for it. It was great.
It was It was a moment you didn't think was coming because traditional WWE, Finn Balor's your king. But they got brownie points. They earned their fan base back with a great, great move by putting it on Woods. Because, again, traditional WWE is Finn. Traditional WWE, Finn is your king. Giving it to Woods means they listen to what the people wanted to see. And it's not anything against Finn. This was Woods' moment.
All of the everything was right. It's like when Big E won Money in the Bank, and then when Big E won the title, when Kofi won the title. The moment was absolutely perfect. Everything was there to make this really tremendous memory occur. And this just absolutely historic moment for Woods. And so it's like, after being the guy in the tag team for so long, he's finally achieved a level of single success. And it's something he really wanted. Because, and I don't want to say too much because he talks about it in the interview.
Let's go, before we go, before you finish let's talk, let's hear what he has to say, and then we'll finish up on this.
Okay.
I haven't been nervous in years. Because everything is like, I've been doing this for so long. Nothing's really new, you know? So like, I've been nervous all day. I was nervous all match, and normally I'm nervous and then music hits and I go through the curtain and it's fine and everything goes away and I'm in the zone. Like, this was, I've never felt like anything like this. I couldn't hear anything, like I couldn't feel anything like I normally feel, like the people and stuff. It's like I was in like a wind tunnel, and like the only thing that mattered was Finn. I don't know, it's just like, it's this weird new feeling. It's just weird because like I'm like 17 years in and like I have a new feeling now. And it's like, it's like really cool, you know? So like, I don't know, I thought I felt everything already, you know? Like, almost 20 years in wrestling, like, since I was 17. Like, this is, like, this is the only, like, real thing. This and tag team stuff, I love tag team wrestling. But, like, this is the only, like, singles accolade that I, like, ever cared about. Like, titles are cool. Even, like, that, like, white leather IC title, like, is so dope. But, like, I only care about this. Like, you know you can do something, and you know that it's, like, possible, but, like, there's something in your head that says, no, like, this will never happen, this is a pipe dream, like, you've done well enough, you know, like, you'd be happy, like, with what you have, you know, so, like, I don't know, I guess I never, like, actually, like, really believed this would, like, ever really happen for me, so it's...
That's awesome. Yeah, Big E was everyone. If you just, the Twitter timeline for like 20, 30 minutes afterward was just, congratulations Woods, hail King Woods, everyone from Dakota Kai, Big E, Kofi, all his boys, Breeze. Yeah, they all praised it. This was really good. So one thing from the mat, from the celebration was, he's out there, he's boasting like everything like that, but he's got to do everything proper, right, Lindsay?
Mm-hmm.
And tries to put on the cape, and the cape wouldn't stay.
I like that the cape is coordinated to the gear, by the way.
Yeah, but he was trying to put on the cape, and we'll get it later. We'll get it later, because he could have just—he didn't realize it straps up the top, and yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't need it though. He'll figure it out.
He figured it out later. Yeah, he was in that promo. He was wearing it. That's what brought it back to my head.
Yeah, but it was like, This was everything you wanted to see with him, and then some. And it was really lovely to see. It's like, that was your big feel-good moment for the show. Because I think, and because, like I said, I think that was the moment we were all sort of dreading. Because it's like, oh God, are they actually going to do the thing? Or are they not going to do the thing? And so it was a huge relief to everybody when they pulled the trigger on Woods. And they're like, yes, we're going to do it. We're going to give him King of the Ring. And we're going to just own this. And it was lovely. I can't stop saying that enough. It was just absolutely lovely because that interview shows how much this meant to him. And this is a big sign of faith from WWE to Xavier that, yes, we see you, we acknowledge you, and we believe in you. Because they've kind of, you know, they split New Day up, and Xavier and Kofi, they've been doing their thing, but they really have sort of just been drifting. They haven't really done a lot with them since the split, and that's partially because people got hurt, what have you, so they couldn't really push the New Day as a duo. So they, you know, they split Big E off. Big E's off doing his thing. Kofi was off doing his thing. And then there's just kind of Woods,
who was just coming back from injury over the last year.
Yeah, so he's missed a lot. So the fact that they did this for him is really nice. Good job, WWE.
Yeah, good job. Speaking of Big E, he's in our next match.
He is. And I don't know how Big E feels. I'm sure he's ecstatic.
He posted on Twitter. He was excited.
You know, that's one of his best friends, so I'm sure he's thrilled.
Broncos, just pack it up. How do you lose to the Browns, the shorthanded Browns? Just pack it up. Anyway.
They tried. I mean, it's 17-14. It's literally a field goal.
Yeah, but they didn't have their quarterback or their running back. Just pack it up.
Can you do that?
No, but you should.
Because Atlanta needs to do that too. Anyway, WWE Championship is on the line as Big E is taking on Drew McIntyre. I like this. This was hard hitting. They were throwing each other around.
The big dude slapping meat.
Again, you forget how tall Drew is.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, you really, really do. And because it's like, when I picture Big E, I picture Big E a lot taller than he is because he's such a large person.
Large presence, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and when I say large, I mean he's like broad-chested and broad-shouldered and muscular and, you know, he's all these things, right? And so you picture him being a lot taller, and he is tall. Like, he's like 6 feet. And then there's Drew, who's just like towers over Big E, and you're like, damn.
Yeah.
Like you really do. You forget how tall Drew McIntyre is sometimes.
Big E's only 5'11". It's a little surprising. Drew's 6'5".
Yeah. Like, Drew's a tall drink of water.
So this was a good match. It was what it was. It wasn't anything outstanding. It wasn't anything memorable, but it doesn't mean it wasn't good. The one spot they were going for a top rope big ending spot, and Drew fell off the ropes, and then he's slowly climbing back up. It's like, if you're only going to do, like, the finish, but not the finish, it looks weird that you're climbing back up. He would hit a bulldog off of it to escape the big ending, but it was like, I would have just, like, gone away from the spot because watching Drew climb back up the ropes was awkward. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. It looked awkward visually to me, how the moves were set up. But, again, match was fine. I like the tilt-a-whirl big ending for the win. There was, like, one moment where you thought, oh, he had the big claymore, it was a long two count, like, that Drew was going to possibly win, but I think the ending was pretty much in doubt the entire time.
This was good. I mean, obviously, this didn't have a really big build. This didn't have a long build because it's two baby faces-ish going against each other before Drew kind of goes off to SmackDown. So you pretty much knew what the conclusion of this was going to be. But there was a little doubt because it's like with the whole women's title situation, it's like, I don't know, they might. But seeing as Roman was facing off against, you know, Brock, it's like, well, Brock could technically come to Raw with the title and, you know, you have that whole thing. But I doubt they're going to do that. And they didn't. I mean, Big E won decidedly. And, you know, it was a good match. It was entertaining. Like, there were a couple issues, but it wasn't awful.
No, it was a good match. It's not going to be something you look back and go, hey, remember that Big E Drew match? That was memorable. It was a match that happened. It was there. It was good.
I look forward to when these two can go and they can have a proper feud with each other, because I feel like it would be really good if they had the time and the build with it, but they just, because of circumstance, they just didn't have it. And I think that's a lot of what's on this show. Is that some of the matches had better builds than others. It's like the Queen's Crown. You know, they could have... It was a great idea in theory, but in terms of the execution of it, they just didn't give themselves enough time to really build it properly. And so because that, it was very rushed. The whole thing was very rushed. King of the Ring, you had the really great moment with Xavier, but again, it was... The whole tournament was a little rushed because they knew about it, they knew it was coming, but they just didn't have the time. Or they did. I shouldn't say they didn't have it. They didn't give themselves the time to build it properly. Drew versus Big E, they kind of put this together pre-draft after E won the title. And it's like Drew's like, oh, yay, you know, you finally got the title away from Bobby Lashley. Because I think there was actually the stip that Drew couldn't win the title as long as Lashley.
Couldn't fight. Yeah, he lost his last title match to
him. So it's like Drew's like, oh, yay, I can finally fight for the title again. Woo! And then it's like, but, you know... I didn't get my moment. I'm still chasing my moment. And it's like, well, but, you know, I respect that, but that's not really a reason to go after Big E. It's just, hey, you have the title. I want the title. I want to win the title one more time. You know, let's fight. And that was the build for it. And you kind of had some back and forth, but overall it was just like, like, I'm all due respect to Drew. I can't feel sorry for him because he didn't get the big pop, because I'm sure at some point he will get it. So that's the thing, is like, you know, that's coming for him at some point. It's just not going to happen right now because they're not going to do the thing. So anyway, moving on, just to make it official, by the way, Big E.
And still,
Big E won. In what could be considered a contender for a match of the night, the SmackDown Women's Championship is on the line as Becky Lynch defends against Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks in a triple threat. I wanted this. I am not disappointed by this at all. This was, like, not at all.
This was very athletic. This was... match of the night sounds good for this match. Maybe this was two. Hell in a Cell 1, this was 2.
It's like right there. It has some flaws to it.
Yeah, but it's very even though. But can we talk about the press slam by Bianca just sort of one-handing Sasha Banks?
I mean, Bianca, you didn't have to. You did, and we all appreciate it. But like, that was just,
She was showing off. Like, they all got in spots to show off their athleticism in this one. Becky was, one, got a massive pop. She was over.
Sasha got a massive pop. Sasha got chance.
Yeah, this was, I love what they did in this match. Usually in triple threats, you go, okay, here's a spot, one-on-one, but they came up with some creative that some worked, some didn't, but they at least tried three-person spots throughout the match. You had stuff in the corners and everything like that. You tried different things. You kept all three women in the match at the same time, which is like usually they not toss one out of the ring and then the others go. And you had that, but there was a lot of three-person situations in this one. I like that.
Yeah, they did a really good job working together. You can tell that they have definitely practiced this match together, because it's like Becky and Sasha can work together all day long. They've done enough matches together that they pretty much have it figured out. But you're throwing Bianca in, which Bianca has not worked a lot with Becky or Sasha. So they have to figure out that dynamic with her included. And I think they did a really good job doing that. Like, all three of them were hyped.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a huge step for WWE. Just like the Queen's Crown was. This is a huge step because the last time the women were allowed to wrestle in WWE in Saudi, it was an exhibition match between Natty and Lacey, and it wasn't really that great. They tried, but they were not allowed to do specific moves because of the government. Here, the government was not as restrictive, and they were able to actually have a really, really, really fantastic match. The only hindrance, I feel like, was the attire, and this was for the other match, too. Because they all had to wear t-shirts to cover their figures. And so in certain instances, the sleeves on the shirts were very restricting. And so they couldn't quite do what they wanted to do, or they couldn't quite get the hold right because of the t-shirt. And that's not a bad thing at all. It's just, you notice that, you could tell that they weren't quite moving and comfortable as they normally are because they're not in their normal gear.
Which is fine, which is why you saw a lot of more running kicks and jumping spots compared to previous matches. And Becky was really out there showing off her skills. So was Bianca in terms of like flips and stuff like that. I love Becky's double cover, and I love the moment where Becky gets caught coming off the top rope by Sasha and Bianca. Like, can you just put me down? You could just like,
Can we talk about this?
And then they threw her into the turnbuckle. It was like, it was great. There was a great double submission spot on Bianca. Who's going to make her tap out? What if she taps out? Who wins? No one knows. So Sasha and Bianca were fighting on set. Becky hit it like a nice flying clothesline on both girls. That was really good. We had a double disarmor spot. Lots of near falls. A small package for the win. Becky still retains. Bianca and afterwards was sitting on the ring apron. All right, now what?
It's like, now you chase her to Raw.
It's like, now what do I do? I don't know what to do. She's just like, I don't know. But this was fantastic. I loved everything about this one.
This was super good. Like I said, I liked the dynamic a lot. I liked the finish. I liked the double disarmer. What was interesting about this one is the story that they told at the beginning, how, because we struggled to pick this match.
Yes.
Quite a bit because of how it was set up. And it's like, when they switched the titles from Raw and SmackDown, you don't know how this is going to go. And you had Charlotte defend against Bianca on Monday, and that was a no finish. So, like, that settles Charlotte's title, but it doesn't settle Charlotte's title because she's going to SmackDown. And so the story that they tell with it is that the title goes with the person. The title does not belong to the brand. It belongs to the person.
Mm-hmm.
So the story that they were sort of telling with this was that Sasha, and they said this, Sasha is fighting to keep the title on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
The SmackDown Women's Championship. She's fighting to keep it on that brand. And it's like, you sit there for a minute and you're like, fuck, are they going to do what I think they're going to do, which is Sasha Banks wins the title off of Becky and Becky and Bianca go off to Raw, which again, they said that they're both going to Raw and Sasha keeps the title on SmackDown because Charlotte, but it's like Charlotte's got hers and they made no mention of Charlotte bringing hers. They just made mention of the fact that the SmackDown title is leaving. And it shouldn't leave, but you have another title coming. So it's like, what are y'all doing here? What's going on? So they didn't do that. Becky's taking the title with her to Raw, but this was everything I could want from this match and more. I would love to see it one more time where they're not restricted. Sasha, honey, your gear, gorgeous. Like, I got to see, she put pictures on Instagram out of it without the t-shirt. So you could see the full thing. It is bedazzled head to toe. It's stunning. This was a great semi-main or co-main, depending on how you want to look at it, because I'm sitting here and I'm watching them like doing the show and it's like, is the triple threat ending? Are they going to close with the girls in Saudi Arabia? Because just think about that. That would be an absolutely huge stride, but it didn't happen. But just the fact that this match happened at all, I'm here for it. It's progression. It's change. So good job.
So speaking of Instagram, Becky Lynch took the Instagram. Tonight was about so much more than a title. I'll set aside my usual trash talk tonight. Thank you to the women I shared the ring with tonight. You pushed me to do better. Thank you to the fans watching at home. Thank you to the incredible fans in Riyadh tonight who cheered ferociously throughout our whole match and making the first trip to Saudi Arabia so memorable, inspiring, so much hope for the future of women around the world. Thank you to the women who have laid the path for us to do what we do. Congratulations to the first Queen of the Ring at the Trinidad. And thank you to TJ Wilson for being one of the greatest minds the wrestling business has and collaborating with us to make magic. I'll go back to hating everyone tomorrow, wanting to slap heads, but tonight I want to say thank you. Hashtag and still. Well said.
Very well said.
All right, let's get to the main event.
So in your main event, you have the Universal Championship on the line as Roman Reigns defends against Brock Lesnar. Jesus Christ, Brock is over.
He was, good lord, the pop he got was massive. Oh my god, it's massive.
And this story in this match was told so beautifully because for the first
5-6 minutes
of this match, Paul Heyman played no factor in this. He showed no emotion. He just stood there watching the match, not really reacting at all, right? Because he has his best friend and he has his business associate wrestling each other. And what do you do in that instance?
He just...
Nothing. You do nothing. You stand there and you clutch that title.
Roman's big offense was deep being on defense throughout the early part of the match of trying to avoid going to Suplex City.
And that didn't happen.
He tried. He tried so hard, but he would take a couple of suplexes and go to Suplex City. There was a big dive by Roman to the outside where it's like, ooh, he could have smacked his head on that guardrail.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lucky he didn't. But yeah, after Roman went to Suplex City, there was a Suplex City chant, by the way. There was one point where I, like, looked away for a second, and I looked back, and Roman's, like, in the corner, gripping the corner for everything he holds dear, as, like, Brock is behind him, aggressively pulling on him, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? What did I just, like, look at for a second? And then he got suplexed, and it's like, ah, okay, alright, Roman's taking that trip. Got it.
So, Roman got hit with the F5, 1, 2, he kicked out. Brock starting to get a little frustrated. He gets him up for the second, hits the second F5, and Little Nage took the brunt of it because he got thrown into Little Nage. Then you got the visual 1, 2, 3, he had the pin, but Little Nage was down. So Brock then grabs him by the belt and just lifts him up and drops him, trying to wake him up. Oh, it was so perfect.
Props to him for taking that, by the way. That was impressive. But yeah, Brock is right in the face. He's frustrated. And this is where things got interesting, because Roman and Brock have a little tiff once more, and both of them are knocked out.
Yeah.
And there's Paul Heyman standing between them with the title.
Clutching
it. And he's holding it out, and he's looking at them, and he's conflicted. You see that he is a glass case of emotion right now. And he doesn't know what to do. And so finally he just tosses the title in the ring in between Roman and Brock and screams, "You know what to do with it," and steps back.
He turns his back to it, just puts his hands up and turns his back.
He's like, I'm just not even going to be a part of this. And then Roman and Brock both get up, because Brock gets a hold of the title first.
Hold on.
And
when Paul is thinking about it, you see this smile, a little smile on Brock's face going, all right, we're going to do this, right?
You got me, right?
And then he threw the belt in and, yeah, continue.
So Brock's got hold of the title and Roman's like, oh, hell no. And then they proceed to have a tug of war over the title. I'm like, guys, you're going to break it. Like, you're going to rip it in two, because that's how hard they were pulling on it. But I think Brock got hold of the title.
Brock got the hold of the title for a half a second, because then the bloodline showed up.
Yeah, all while the referee's out. And meanwhile, they're screaming, "We need a referee for this match to continue." I'm like, I'm pretty sure you don't, but you do need a referee to finish it. But, you know, whatever the referee doesn't see while he's laying unconscious on the floor is perfectly legal. And that's exactly what we had. So the Usos come out, they double super kick Brock into a spear.
No, it was a double super kick into the belt, and Roman then hitting the belt shot.
That's right. And then we have the spear.
No,
and another.
There was no spear.
You have Roman's spear in the notes.
Did I? Oh, that was my bad then. It was just a belt shot. I went back and looked at it. It was just the belt shot?
Okay, yeah. All right. I was going to say, I didn't think there was a spear, but you have a spear in the notes, and there was a lot?
Yeah, I know.
So anyway, so Brock gets knocked unconscious. There we go. Roman goes for the pin. Another ref magically appears, and 1, 2, 3, Roman Reigns retains, and the Bloodline plus Paul Heyman leave with the title.
And Brock,
I love this.
Brock is pissed.
Brock is so pissed. That had to be the most awkward plane ride ever. But yeah, so Heyman leaves, but he didn't pick a side. He still could go either way, which I really, really like. And one of the things that they did beautifully in this match is they set up Roman Brock 2. Because Roman won, he technically won, but he needed help from Heyman and the Bloodline to do it. And we all know Brock ain't going to take that line down.
But you also, as I mentioned, as we talked about it, you got the visual of the pin. Brock pinned Roman.
Yep. So we can go back and we can have Brock make a claim. I had you beat. I had this one. I had that title won. And you hid behind your family and you hid behind Heyman. So let's do this again. And Roman refuses and refuses and refuses. And you kind of have Brock chase Roman. Roman refuses to give the match until Brock, I don't know, goes to an event in January called the Royal Rumble, and Brock potentially wins the Rumble, and then he goes to Roman, and he's like, what about now? You can't say no. And that's how you set up Roman and Brock at Mania. I'm just saying. Give me a thing.
Very easy. All right. We went 5-4. I went 6-3, so the 8 ball. You went 7-2.
How?
I don't know.
I have no idea how I went 7. I thought I did horrible in Pick'em, but yay! I beat the 8-ball in the wheel. You, woo!
And me.
And, well, I was just kind of the inanimate objects.
Okay. Yeet. Let's see. You got the two women's matches wrong.
I knew I got those two wrong, but I thought I got a couple other ones wrong, too.
According to the sheet, no, you did not.
Hey, go me. Woo! So with that, I say we're done.
Indeed, we are, in fact. Coming up, Saturday night, midnight-ish, CBRadar, CBRadar.com, GreatDebate.com. We have an interesting one for you, so don't want to miss it. Saturday night, midnight-ish. We'll have video games beforehand. Stay tuned. Look at the Twitters for timing. Sunday night, it's Wrestle Talk Radio. 10 p.m. Eastern. Brent and Tim will recap their version of Crown Jewel and talk all about it and give you guys their thoughts on it. Monday night, Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back next Thursday night for the Rax Halloween Spooktacular. Don't know what we're doing, but it's a spooktacular next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern.
We'll be doing news notes, NXT, all your favorites. We'll have a discussion. It'll probably be Halloween related. We'll figure it out, but it is the Halloween Spooktacular.
Rack Radio Show on all social media platforms and wherever you get podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or even Amazon Music. It's at Wild Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook.com, it's Wild Talk Radio Network. If you have Amazon Prime, link to your Twitch account, it's called Prime Gaming, and you can support the channel by clicking the purple rectangle button below the screen and then apparently a checkbox. As well, you can also use creator code Rockin' Sock or
Linz M. Ward
in the Fortnite item shop or Epic Game Store when you buy your Ariana Grande skins part 2. Why?
Because we are hashtag Epic Partners. You can follow me on most of the social medias at Linz Ward, LANSWRD, and don't forget to check out our very fine sponsor, mbgfilms.youtube.com/mbg1211. So for Rock, I'm Lindsay Ward. You've been listening to The Rack right here on wildtalkradio.com, and we will see you next week. Till then, bye.
Wild Talk Radio Network.